The last stop in the second paragraph of the Masechta, the Mishnah on Chav Chesem Beis tells us that throughout the entire Yom Tov of Sukkot, the person is supposed to make also Sukkoso Keva Ubeso Arayas. Sukkot is supposed to be his primary place of residence, and the house is just somewhere that he goes to visit once in a while. If it rains, though, you're allowed to leave. If it rains to the point, Misha Tisra Chamakta, that your porridge is going to get ruined. So the Gemara tells us, how do you make your sukkah keva? You bring all your nice kelim into the sukkah, and metzos na'os, you bring everything into the sukkah. You should eat, drink in the sukkah, hang out in the sukkah, and that's all part of the concept of teish l'kein to duru, that you should live in the sukkah as nicely and as beautifully as a person lives in their house. The Gemara then goes through a list of certain kelim that belong in the sukkah. Mani mishtia b'mitalalta, drinking kelim you could always leave in the sukkah. Eating kelim, food kelim, you only have in the sukkah while you're using them, but once you're done, they're dirty and they're disgusting, so you shouldn't leave them around the sukkah, just like you wouldn't leave them around your dining room. After you finish eating, you always clear the plates off of the table. You would do the same in the sukkah. A candle, it really depends. A candle in a small sukkah, in a sukkah katana, the minimum size sukkah, you would never have a candle. Not while you're eating, not while you're not eating. You would never have it in the sukkah. But if it's a larger sukkah, then you would be allowed to have a candle. The Mishnah said that if it rains on sukkahs, then mashal ma'adav adomeh, it's like an eved that comes to pour a kos for his rebbe, and the master pours the shafach lo kiton al panim. Somebody pours the whole thing on his face. So the Gemara raises the question, who's shofeich mi shofeich lemi? Who's pouring what on whose face? So the Gemara says that Brisa says explicitly shofeich lo rabo kiton al panav v'amrlo ef shibeshimushach. It's the master pouring it on the servant's face, saying, I'm not interested in your service. So when we sit in the sukkah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it rain, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of telling us that it's a terrible siman klala, that he's not interested in all of our service and all of our, in our mitzvahs. Once we discuss siman klala, so the Gemara tells us siman klala, that as they relate to the sun and the moon and the constellations, so it says when the chama is loka, when we have a solar eclipse, it's a simen ra for of the chavim. When the levana is loka, when it's a lunar eclipse, it's a simen ra for Klal Yisrael, because Klal Yisrael is more associated with the moon. That's our calendar, is the lunar calendar. The of the chavim more associated with the sun. Based on the positioning of the sun at the eclipse, you can tell which part of the world is going to suffer the most. But it tells us all sorts of horrible things based on that it could be a simen of when the sun has a different shade, when it looks red, so then you know that there's going to be a lot of death in the world, etc. All these terrible things. The Gemara tells us that there are four things that cause a solar eclipse to happen. If someone is not maspid enough, bathed in properly, if Nara Marasa cried for help and no one was there to help her, if people are violating Mishkav Zachar, or if two brothers are killed in one day. Not only that, there are four things that cause the constellations in general to suffer. People who write forged documents, people who are Meir Leid Sheker, people who raise animals in Eretz Yisrael, and people who cut down fruit-bearing trees. And there are four things that cause people's nechassim to be given over to the Malchus. People who keep a shtar perua in their house, an already paid document around their house. People who lend money with interest. People who have the opportunity to stop other people from doing averus, and they don't. And people who commit to giving tzedakah publicly, and then don't deliver on the promise. And then finally, there are four things that nichsei balabatim or yotzim l'timyon, that people's nechassim end up getting hidden from them as a result of four averus. If they withhold temporarily payment for their workers, or if they withhold permanently payment from their workers, or if they're porkin ol me'al tzavarein v'nos al chavarein, they shirk all responsibilities and put it on the other people. But worst of all, gasus haruach, for people who are arrogant, but for people who are humble, we say very wonderful things. That's the end of the second parak. The beginning of the third parak goes through, the third parak is going to be all about the dalad minim. So it starts with lulav, and it tells us the various psulim of a lulav. If it's stolen, if it's dried out, it's pasul. If it's a lulav from an asher tree, from an erin dachas, it's pasul. If its top was cut off, then it's pasul. If the leaves were scattered, so then it's going to be kasher. But Rabbi Yehuda says you still have to tie it together at the top. And the minimum shear of a lulav is three tefachim plus an extra tefach, an extra tefach to shake with. So the Gemara starts out by saying, I understand Yom Tov Rishon, why it is that a stolen lulav is going to be a problem. because it has to be lachem and it's not yours. But why Yom Tov Sheni? Why after the first day of Yom Tov is a stolen lulav problematic for the mitzvah? So Gemara says this is the concept of mitzvah ba'aveira, which Bez Hashem will discuss in tomorrow's daf.